Welcome to Joe Tripp and Friends, Podcast 1, Remembering Jeff Buckley.
Well, the aliens are coming, they're coming while I'm stumbling. They fill me up with such a sense of pride. When the aliens do take me, I hope that they will let me bring my little sister for my bride.
This is Joe Trippishan. The song you hear is Ozark Melody, written and performed by the legendary Jeff Buckley. It was co-written by Frederick Reed with lyrics by yours truly. Fred is our guest today. He is a singer, composer, performer, and my friend, and he'll share with us his memories of Jeff and the background story to this rare track, Ozark Melody. Hello, Fred. How are you?
Fine, Joe. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for joining us. Tell me, when did you first meet Jeff?
Well, I met him when I worked at Fez. I was the audio engineer at Fez and the production manager for many, many, many years. Fez was a very popular performance space downtown in New York City in Manhattan on the corner of Great Jones and Lafayette Street. And we had a lot of great performers there. Jeff came in. He was supposed to play that day. I had heard a little bit about him, that he's supposed to be a great singer and that he was Tim Buckley's son and that people were talking about him after he had performed at the Tim Buckley tribute concert at St. Anne's. So this was, I don't know, a few months after that, I think.
May or June of 91. He did the St. Anne's gig in April, April 26, 91, so shortly after that, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It might have even been in the fall.
So he played there. What was your first impression of him when you met him? Where were you? What was he doing?
Well, actually, he missed his sound check and then walked in with his guitar while I was sound checking another artist, and just kind of was hanging around. He was like 3 hours late for a sound check and we had to open. And so I just asked him basically what he needed, you know, how many mics, etc., if he needed a direct box. And he just brought in a small amp. I think it was a Telecaster, a Fender Telecaster he was playing that night. And which I think he borrowed from someone, a small amp. And anyway, so at first I thought he was like a goofy kid because, you know, he was late for soundcheck, then he was kind of bopping around. But he was standing in front of the soundboard as we opened the club, and I was playing a tape of Miles Davis's. It was either On the Corner or In a Silent Way. And, you know, he was bopping around, and it was kind of irritating me because he was standing right in front of the soundboard and kind of like listening to music and bopping around. And then I started to talk to him, and he knew every single musician in the sessions for that for the tape I was playing. And I was pretty amazed. I was like, oh, this kid knows a lot about music, because most people that time, that in that scene, wouldn't know much about Miles Davis whatsoever. And then once he got on stage, I was very, very impressed. You know, after the first song or two.
So did he do any of the numbers from his Grace album? Because this was like a year before he was signed to Sony to record the Grace album.
Couple years, I think. He didn't do any of those songs. The thing that impressed me most, he really impressed the manager of Fez at the time, this guy named Max. He was playing slide guitar, he had been playing guitar, and then he picked up a slide, and at one point he started to do a bunch of his vocal warbling and improv, and he hit a note on the slide guitar, and he was warbling with the guitar slide, you know, bending the pitch up and down. Anyway, so Jeff starts sliding a note up and down, the pitch up and down on the slide, and he sings a harmony to his slide guitar with his voice, and he was just doing like a woo 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 with his voice, and the combined tone of the guitar and his voice were amazing. It was there were all these overtones in the room, and it was amazing. And I realized, oh my God, this guy is an incredible singer, you know, incredibly talented. And so from then on, you know, I was kind of like an older brother to Jeff, because I told him how much I really liked him and appreciated his guitar playing. And we started talking a lot about other artists and old music. And he played at Fez a lot after that. He would come. A lot of times he wasn't even scheduled for a gig. He'd come and he'd just play a number or two between acts, you know, or sit in with other artists at Fez, too.
How often did he make his appearance there at Fez?
Oh, God. Dozens and dozens of times. I must have mixed him at Fez like 30 to 40 times, I think.
And this was after he was signed with Sony as well?
Before and after, yeah. Well, you know, after the album came out, he started to play more. He didn't do much solo gigs. You know, he started to play more with the band. You know, before that, he had done dozens of solo gigs at Fez.
Did you see his music progress then from the time he made his first performance at Fez and after when he and his band played Numbers from Grace?
I don't know. I always loved seeing him perform solo, you know. And for a while, it took the band, I don't know if the band ever really caught up with Jeff in terms of, you know, they started to follow him better as they played more and more. But for a while, it was just like the band, I think they had a hard time finding their niche, you know.
Yeah.
Took them a while to play together because Jeff was just such a spontaneous and creative artist that it would have been hard for anyone to follow him.
Had you guys ever jammed together?
Jeff and I, yeah. We jammed. The first time he came, he wanted to see Long Island City.
That's not the first thing I think of when I want to go to move to New York and see Long Island City, you know.
Well, I basically, you know, he'd been, I don't know, playing Fez for like a year or so, and you know, I told him I had a good view of the city outside of my apartment building at that time, which I did. You know, I had a good view of the Empire State Building, United Nations, could see the World Trade Center. So, yeah, he came over and didn't bring a guitar. I had a couple guitars there, and we just started playing, and we were jammed a bit, and we were looking through my record collection, and, you know, so we had some fun. I had a lot of old vinyl in my apartment and a lot of books and stuff like that. So, you know, we played, hung out, you know, had a few beers, and you know, it was fun. It was a fun afternoon.
So you moved your studio to my apartment. I had an extra room there.
Mm-hmm.
This was on West 43rd Street by the Hudson River. And you told me one day in the summer of 96 that Jeff Buckley was going to come over and visit and you know, hang out for a while. So how did that whole invitation come about?
I've been talking to Jeff about the recording I was doing, and I'm trying to think what project we had done at the time, if it was...
Well, we were doing the Alien music.
Okay.
I should tell our listeners that I wrote a book at the time. It was scheduled to be published, it was published in May of 97, and at the time you and I were working on a series of Alien-inspired songs, because my book... It was a humor book. It was called The Official Alien Abductees Handbook, a self-help guide for recovering from alien abductions. And we called this collection of alien-inspired songs Melodies for Abductees. And they're all very fun, humorous little riffs on alien and alien mythology. So was that what you mentioned to Jeff, or was it just a casual, you know, open invitation? Hey, come over, I'll be here on the weekend, check it out.
Yeah, I've been talking to Jeff about film music and stuff like that. And also, you know, Jeff had known that we had done stuff for Sesame Street. And so he was interested in seeing the setup I had. and checking out some of my instruments and stuff. So it was kind of like an open invitation. It didn't come out of the blue. It's just Jeff had been really, really busy with touring and recording and stuff. So, you know, it was kind of an open invitation. I said, anytime you want to come by, you know, come on by, check out the stuff. And he was always curious about other people's music and what they were doing and stuff. So, you know, he just came up, you know, for the hell of it. And basically it started out as a jam and it turned into Ozark Melody.
When I first met Jeff, he came up to the apartment and he looked very disheveled, like he'd been up drinking all night, quite frankly. But as soon as he looked into my eyes, I saw that he was just sober, stone cold sober. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. He was very affable, and he had a great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I think that most people don't know. People who've never met Jeff don't know about him. They had a terrific sense of humor. And in the biography books that are written about Jeff, almost every one of his friends and colleagues, they all mentioned what a great sense of humor this guy had, how he could have been a stand-up comic, how he's great comic timing, and he was a great mimic. So, he walked into your studio. I remember this distinctly. You handed him a mandolin. He picked it up and just started playing like he was born playing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked him, he says, oh, you played the mandolin before? He said, nope, the first time I ever touched one. I was blown away. I never met someone with that such natural musical ability. And then we started talking about the Alien book, and he was just strumming around there on the mandolin. And he was repeating this one short phrase, oh, the aliens are coming, humming along. And I thought to myself, I said, this is a real opportunity here. So I started writing out the lyrics and I started printing them out. I handed the sheets to you and to Jeff. He took a look at them. He says, hey, Fred, check this out. And you guys started working right away on the melody to the song. And then you started working on the chorus. And I kept writing the lyrics. And then next thing you know, you guys were setting up the microphones. You were recording Sly Guitar, he was recording two tracks of mandolin. We got to the vocal part, you wanted him to sing along, he said, let's all sing together, and he turned to me, he said, come on, Joe, you sing too. And I remember this, you started saying, okay, Joe, but way in the back, way in the back.
Yeah, well, I was trying to get him to sing it himself, you know, because, but he's like, no, we're going to sing it together. I'm like, okay, you know.
I mean, that's what I remembered about the whole session. It was just such a natural, you know, it was just a natural environment. Everything worked organically. And it was the friendliest, funniest session I've ever been in. Because we were all cracking jokes about aliens coming to abduct people in this hillbilly song. And only later did I realize that Jeff was actually a big fan of hillbilly music.
I think he was a big fan of all kinds of music, actually, you know. If you listen to the covers that he did, he was a big fan of all kinds of music. I mean, one of the musics that he liked, which was like, at that point in the media, you couldn't tell anyone that you liked prog rock, you know. That was a dirty pleasure, progressive rock, you know, that was a dirty name and a dirty pleasure, you know.
it wasn't considered cool
to like prog rock, but...
So it was Genesis.
Yes, you know. Genesis, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, you know, Led Zeppelin was like progressive blues, Jethro Tull, he liked all that stuff. I mean, he liked Rush too. I wasn't a big fan of Rush, but I could appreciate, you know, well, they're good musicians, you know. But he came over to my house and he saw a lot of prog rock records, you know. And he liked all that stuff. He loved Peter Gabriel and, you know. So, you know, he used to talk about that stuff. But he grew up playing that stuff, you know. Like, he could play Led Zeppelin note for note. You know, he liked Genesis, he loved Steve Howe, all those like hyped up prog rock players, you know, he really liked that kind of stuff, you know, he grew up on that stuff. But of course, that was like a dirty, it wasn't cool to tell that to trendy New Yorkers, you know. You had to like, you know, no wave music or roots music or blues. You couldn't tell like a trendy New York journalist that you like prog rock, you know. So he didn't. But yet, you know, if you listen to My Sweetheart the Drunk, you know, he's like playing with his four track and doing the Genesis song from Lamb Lies Down on Broadway on his four track way after he got signed, you know. You know, he liked all kinds of music. If it had like soul or it has, he loved, you know, he liked classical music, he liked qawwali music, he liked blues, he liked soul, he liked rock, you name it, country. He liked all kinds of music, you know. Yes. He just had a great ear. He was basically an embodiment of music. He just let it channel through him.
Yeah, and he was a great mimic, too. People talk about how he could, like, imitate, you know, Robert Plant and, mm-hmm. and Tom Waits. And he certainly did, like, a great hillbilly number on the Ozark Melody track. If you hear some of the unmixed tracks, you can hear him at the end of one of the vocals, you know, doing this humorous poke you all kinds of places and get that probe out of here, boy, and all that funny riff that he was doing.
Poke you all kinds of places. Get that probe out of there, boy.
And you also talk about his sense of humor, too, and how he loved pranks. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of times, you know, we would talk about, like, pranking the other bands you know, pranking people at Fez, whatever, you know.
I mean, what? Be specific. Give me, like, an example.
Well, one of the nasty... There was an artist coming that was rumored to be having issue with drugs, and we were talking about, like, jabbing a hypodermic needle into the wall or leaving a hypodermic needle on the end table, you know, with some
vampire. No, you're kidding.
No, seriously. Yeah, no.
But he got a big kick out of that.
Oh, yeah, no, he laughed his ass.
But you never
ass.
Did any
we
of
never, No, I never did it, but we were talking about, like, I remember one time it was Mick Grundle and Jeff and I, his bass player, were talking about all kinds of pranks, you know, we were thinking of doing, you know, and they were laughing their asses off, you know, things you could do on the road and stuff to people in hotel rooms and things, you know, to gross out other band members and stuff.
People always talk about Jeff, how he would sometimes goof around on stage and, you know, make jokes and mimic different musicians and actors. Did you ever see that in any of his performances?
Yeah, I mean, I remember one show that he didn't even pick up his guitar for like the first 10-15 minutes of the show. He came and he was like joking around, then he started clapping his hand and he's trying to get everybody in the audience to sing what's that Nina Simone song? My brain isn't working yet.
My brain isn't working yet. That's an odd.
No, yeah. No. It's My Brain. And Nina Simone. It's Nina Simone. She covered it. I think it's like Be My Husband, I'll Be Your Wife.
I'll Be Your Wife, right.
Yeah, he didn't even pick up the guitar for the first 10, 15. He started to sing that song. He's trying to get the audience to sing with him. And then, you know, he's berating them for not singing loud enough. And he's, like, cracking jokes and pretending to be, like, a talk show host MC, you know, trying to get them to sing along. And that was, like, one of the best shows. I remember it was Rebecca Moore and her mother were sitting in the front. You know, he's cracking jokes to them, you know, half the show.
He was a funny guy and a great musical talent.
Well, he had a musicality about him, an intuitiveness that was great. And I remember another time at Fez, there were a few bands playing, and one of the bands, there were three bands playing that night, and Jeff just kind of wandered in with this guitar, and it was Adam Roth, he's kind of like, he's a performer and kind of like a comedian, and Charlie Roth, his brother, I think Charlie, who I've known forever, he's been living in New York forever, and Charlie does music for Sesame Street, he's a composer, I think he plays with Dennis Leary too, Charlie plays bass, keyboards, drums, anyway, so, you know, Charlie's talking to Jeff, and then, you know, they're hanging out in the dressing room, and And like Charlie's like, yeah, why don't you come play a number with us, sit in. And so they Jeff sits in with him and he sings and plays, and they did like a perfect rendition of The Ocean by Led Zeppelin. Jeff's singing it and playing it, and it's like everyone in the audience is like, whoa. You know, he's like singing, he's not only playing Jimmy Page's guitar parts, but he's singing like note for note rendition of Robert Plant's vocals.
Amazing.
Yeah, so amazing. You're sitting there in this club, you know, it's just completely spontaneous, no rehearsal, and you're like, whoa. It's pretty amazing.
And again, I mean, I only met him that one day during that session where we recorded that Ozark melody song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that he's so such an impressive artist, and you know, such a great loss too.
Mm-hmm.
After he died, and Sony had found out about this song that we recorded with him, you know, they wanted to hear it. So at some point you told me that, you know, you got a copy to them, or you gave it to Jeff's manager and Sony listened to it. Tell me about that story.
Well, I heard that. I'm trying to remember who told me, because it was a big joke between Jeff and I after we did that session, you know. After that, I'd mention the song, and I'd go, you know, Jeff, sometime that song is going to come back to haunt you, you know. Because at that point, Jeff had blown up into this worldwide sensation, you know. People were raving about him. Once again, Robert Plant and Jimmy Page were raving about him, you know. So that must have been quite something for Jeff to have his musical heroes, you know, Led Zeppelin, raving about him as being the best artist of the 90s. You know, I would joke around with Jeff, because he'd hang out at Fez all the time, and I'd go, you know, that song's gonna come back to haunt you. So I'm trying to think of who played it for. It wasn't one of his band members, one of Jeff's friends, or maybe it was Jack Bookbinder,
maybe the manager. Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. It might have been Gene Bowen. I'm not sure. It might have been Gene Bowen who drove the truck for Jeff. You know, he was worked for Fun Palace. It might have been Gene Bowen. I'm not sure. Because Gene had a good sense of humor. But I think somebody played it for Sony in their offices, and they told me the reaction of the record execs at Sony were like the reactions in the producers, the first version of the producers, when they come out and do...
The movie.
When they come out and do Springtime for Hitler.
And everybody was like silent, their mouths wide.
Yeah, their mouths just like dropped, their jaws wide open. It's like, like Jeff.
Talk about bad taste.
Yeah, exactly. Jeff singing, you know, Ozark Melody was akin to, you know, Zero Mostel doing Springtime for Hitler.
Well, that's good, I think. What a comparison.
Yeah.
And so that was the reaction from Sony, and they at first thought, oh, here, an unreleased track, maybe we can put this in, because this was like, you know, right before they released Sketches for My Sweetheart the Drunk. They think, hey, maybe, you know, more material.
Mm-hmm.
They listen to it and says, no, this doesn't fit in this, I don't think. No, sir. No, sir. Well, it's a rarity. We're sharing with you. We're going to segue out of the first podcast with a little bit more of Ozark Melody. Now tune in the next podcast when Fred reveals some unknown stories about Jeff and the music scene in New York City.
Such a sense of pride.